This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 584, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 584. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello, Connor Kilpatrick.
And Ron Richards.
I'm so glad that the deprogramming worked, Connor. You're back to your old self.
Yeah, but this right sequence of flashing lights can fuck him up.
Shh, don't tell anybody.
Short, fast, strobe.
That Twin Peaks episode, really. Did a wonder on me. We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book of that stack, and we call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, read some other comics, talk about those books, do the patron pick, give out some superpowers, do some listener mail if we've got time. Basically try to have fun for 1 hour. Just hold on for 1 hour and have fun, and then you can go back to being miserable.
That's all we ask for.
Hold on.
Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be spoilers. So if you're worried about that, exercise some caution. Ron, this week, had the pick of the week. Sorry, buddy.
No, it's okay, actually. And pick of the week this week was X-Men Blue number 3, despite what our script says.
I was really confused.
I know. I'm sorry. Listen. I got a lot of plates I'm spinning.
Dude, I'm not the one. It's okay.
But X-Men Blue number 3, written by Cullen Bunn, with art by Jorge Molina and Ray Anthony Height. With colors by Matt Mila and letters by Joe Caramagna. And for the past month, I've been mostly happy with the X-Men Resurrection relaunch, right? X-Men Gold has had its issues. Again, we're not going to mention that. So what more can we add to that? And some of the other books have been interesting. I think Weapon X, despite Greg Land, I think Greg Pak's doing a great job on that. That also came out this week. I enjoyed Jean Grey last week, all this sort of stuff. But to me, the real gem has been X-Men Blue number one. X-Men Blue. And with issue number 3, listen, it's hard. With issue number 3, it just really... I'm so glad this is amusing you.
I almost spit, too. I'd taken a drink, and then I got late last night. I got back late, and I'm tired, so... what that means.
We are not aging well. That's what it means. So X-Men Blue number 3, X-Men Blue continues to be the one that's hitting my X-Men, that's pushing my buttons. That's
your joy button.
Scratching the X-Men itch, and it's a combination of, I really like what Jorge Molina is doing on this issue, and I don't quite know or understand where the division between Jorge Molina and this Ray Anthony Height is, because they're both credited on the art, and I didn't really see like a dramatic style change, maybe towards the end, but if they did, they masked that pretty well. But from a story-wise, Cullen Bunn just like, great job in distilling down what makes the X-Men really interesting and giving and basically giving us that. And so this book is following the time-displaced young X-Men, you know, the classic lineup of Cyclops, Jean Grey, Angel, Iceman, and Beast. And they are working with Magneto, and they're working to fulfill Xavier's dream, and they've got a nice Blackbird, and they're going to help New Mutants, and they've discovered a New Mutant in Spain, and right as they discover her, they're attacked by Sentinels. And this is, you know, like, we've seen a lot of iterations of Sentinels over the year, but this is, like, drawing on the classic Sentinel design of the 60s, which I think is one of the best big robot designs of all comics of all time. Hard to argue that, right?
No, yeah, it's obviously
good big robot.
And but then what he did with that was able to introduce an interesting twist that we haven't seen before, in that bringing back a character from the past, not a character I particularly liked. In the late 90s, there was a villain named Bastion, who then merged with Nimrod and Master Mold, and he's been gone for a while. But the great thing about the X-Men is that there's this legacy, there's this history, and there's this stuff that's been going on for ages. And this is one of the first books to kind of acknowledge that in a while. And Bastion has realized that mutants are facing extinction due to the Terrigen, all the stupid inhuman stuff, and also at the fact now that they're the lowest number of mutants of all time. And his robot programming is to eradicate all mutants, but if mutants are eradicated, he can't fulfill his program. So he's adjusted his program and built new Sentinels to help protect mutants so that their population can grow so that he can kill them.
Makes sense. It's ironclad logic.
It's perfect X-Men logic, if you ask me. And I mean, and at the end of the day, X-Men fighting Sentinels is always fun and always interesting. And these new Sentinels we see, are each one is attuned to each member of this team's powers, and there's a subtle art nod in that, and that they each have a different color. You know, like the one that's tuned towards Cyclops is colored red and can stop his optic blasts, and there's one that's colored blue that can stop Iceman, and there's one that's colored green for Jean Grey. That's a clever take on it. All in all, it's X-Men comics as they're meant to be. And as I was reading my books this week, I was like, man, I love this. This is great.
Have we mentioned in the past the costumes? Because these are new.
Yeah, these are McKelvey designs.
Yeah, they're much better than the last ones. Still, yeah. It's still never a good idea to flash back to the original blue and gold suits, because you're like, okay, well, those are perfect.
Yeah, like that one page, of the flashback of them fighting the original Sentinels in the classic blue and gold. It's like, oh man, that's a great design. So simple.
I don't like that when Iceman ices up, he's still got his clothes on.
Yeah. Okay. You want the Iceman body?
Yeah, but that's just a minor thing.
I also don't like Angel's demon wings or Cosmic. Well,
that was
demon
my other
wings.
My other point was, I don't know what they have against him just having wings, but they always seem to have find a reason to give him some weirdo wings, and now he's got these demonic fire wings.
Because here's the thing is that, like, just boring. Like, oh, you can fly. You know, like that's why, like, I love the classic the original X-Men number one cover by Stan and Jack. They're all fighting Magneto, and Angel's in the air holding a bazooka.
But it's just, you know,
even the odds. We can do.
Flying isn't enough.
you're right, though. This is fun. The art's great, and you've mentioned before they've actually drawn like their kids.
Yeah. And actually, now that I look at it more closely, the latter pages do.
Yeah, you can see the art.
Yeah, I can see. I do see the page that it changes, but even then, it's in the same. It's not
stylistically similar.
Yeah, stylistically similar. It's in the same wheelhouse. Yeah.
I also appreciate that these artists actually realize that Scott's nickname is Slim.
Yes.
And they draw him slimmer. Not as slim. Not always, but the last couple of pages, he's pretty slim. I mean, they called him Slim. He's a tall, skinny dude.
Well, I mean, I've talked about this numerous times, but I think one of the reasons why this book is doing so well, and why I like, I don't know if it's doing well, why it's doing so well for me, and because I think what Molina and Height are doing here is these are kids, these are teenagers, they need to look like teenagers. Even, you know, Beast is a little more beefy, you know, but that's part of his mutation, right? you know, there's
he's working on it, Ron. He's cutting out carbs.
Right, yeah, and there's a couple of pages where they've got, you know, like, Iceman looks the best. Iceman looks like a kid, right? And Jean, yeah, too, you know. Cyclops, Angel, Beast get a little bit of peck, you know, kind of action going on, a little bit of muscles and that sort of thing. But that could just be the clinginess of the costumes. But, no, but they, but they,
what's that on the cover? They get a little bit of peck action.
20 pages of peck action.
But you they could do move units with that, is what I'm saying.
But even with the muscles, they do. They look like they look younger. They look kid, like kids. They, you get a sense of not as much confidence, you know, in the way the story is being told. And it's just, I don't know. It just it's working. When the X-Men work, it, like, when things click into place, I can tell. And let me tell you, this is working.
It's almost indescribable. It's a feeling you get. Yeah. It's an X-Men feeling that, yeah, hasn't been around for a while.
Right. And what I liked was, like, the first two issues gave us glimpses of what's going on with Magneto and what his, like, kind of big play is. No mention of Magneto in this issue. You know, extend that mystery. Give us a new villain that is a new take on an existing character that we understand. Bring back a classic aspect of the X-Men with Sentinels. Like, these, it's like a checklist. Like, I could have written this and sent it to Marvel and be like, this is what you need to do to make the X-Men work. And I'm just glad that they are following my imaginary checklist that I never sent them.
You should do it every month.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, Ron again. I don't know if you got my last letter, but...
It's like, Connor, that's like... That's like when I used to call the mess general manager and leave him voicemails.
Can I get a year on that?
2002? 2000? 2001? So, like around there?
Were you 25?
Younger. 23.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure I left the voicemails. Said, hey, this is Ron, longtime fan, first time caller.
Well, I mean, like, the whole joke would be funnier, except for the fact that you know there are people who do that.
Yeah.
And it's without irony, and it's like, you know, there's guys, like, who have been writing to Marvel regularly for years.
Yeah.
And they're like, Stu wrote another letter, put it in the pile.
Yeah.
In the Ron pile. So X-Men Blue is good.
Yeah.
It was
great. I mean, and I like the direction that they're taking the Resurrection in. I like that they're, you know, I like that this is, you know, like, I like this focus on this team. It's not too many characters. It's not trying to do too much, you know, and I, with, you know, even though it is feel, if it, now it feels like a DC book and that I'm reading it every week, but for now it's good. And so that's great. So, yeah.
It's not hard. Just put the X-Men, the classic X-Men against some classic villains and then.
Right, you know, and just like,
tell a story.
Remember what makes them good, you know? You know, mm-hmm, like, remember what makes the X-Men work and what hasn't. And look, and for what hasn't, look at the past year with all this Inhuman crap. You know, like, right, you know, bring it down to their core and that they're ostracized, they're on the run, that there are new mutants popping up that they need to help. And yeah, so that's what Cullen Bunn is doing, and so I'm very, very happy to see that this is a X-Men book I can hang my hat on.
Good.
Yeah, but that said, I thought it was a fun, strong week for books in the middle of story arcs. and that said, I loved Avengers number 7. Am I the only one reading Avengers? Or
you are?
Okay.
Yes.
Well, here's what you missed out. You missed out on Phil Noto.
I can see that.
And you missed out on fantastic use of new Doctor Doom as Iron Man. Basically, in this issue, what happens is that Iron Man shows Dr. Doom shows up looking for the Avengers' help because there appears to be a problem at the Sue Storm summer camp for girls, and he needs a hand. And
of course, he's hanging out there. Of course, he is.
And so he goes to the Avengers, and of course, the Avengers immediately go to attack him. But then the young ant girl. The young Wasp, I'm sorry, being the genius that she is, she's enamored with him, and they, instead of fighting, she goes, do you want to get some tea? And so they cut into Avengers Tower, and Victor Von Doom sitting there with one Iron Man gloved pinky sticking out drinking tea and explains to them what's going on, and as opposed to fighting, they actually talk, and the rest of the team is skeptical, but then they team up with him, and they go to the camp, and they solve the demonic kind of problem, and it was just a great Avengers story, I thought. And I think that this Dr. Doom incarnation honestly is really working for me.
Well, Doom's a fun character. Doom's a fun character. If you can write Doom well, it's hard to beat Doom.
It's interesting in the way that, like, sometimes they take some of these older villains and they put that spin on them where, you know, they're not really evil. They're just, you know, egomaniacal or something like that. They did that with Luther for a while when he was president. And you never really got the sense, like, is he actually a bad guy? Or is he just, you know, and I think that they're after, what was the last event? Battleworld. You know, they can sort of change him around and move things. And, like, it's a believable way of doing it because he was never... I don't know. I don't think he worked best when he was evil.
Well, that ties into the analysis of evil, and that, like, is somebody truly, like, is Magneto truly evil because he's fighting for what he believes to be right?
I think
how he's doing the fighting.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think that in this kind of fiction, it's more interesting at this point to just stick them in because they've done such a job of making some characters, you know, flesh them out in various ways over the years that you can kind of, it doesn't make sense for them to just be evil for the sake of it. You know, there are people who are crazy. There's your Jokers, like he's never going to be, you know, safe to be around or anything. But then there's others and you just can't quite tell where they're coming from. And it's fun that they, you know, they slide that lever depending on what they need.
So here's a good question. In the world of comics, who is evil?
Red Skull.
Red Skull. Okay. All right.
Connor, who is evil? Almost all the supervillains are. It's just, that's what's interesting is that even if they think what they're doing is right, if their means are bad, they're evil. Magneto is evil.
Is Captain Cold evil?
He's a thief. I don't know if he's evil. You know what? He's a thief, basically, right?
Your big deal guys, your dark sides.
Right.
Is Lex Luthor evil? He's evil.
He goes back and forth.
Right.
Because his thing isn't, like, he doesn't have, like, a, he wasn't trying to get anybody else. He's just, Superman just really bugs him because he wants to be better than him. And so that made him do things. I don't know. It's not like he wants to, it's not like he's a masochist. You know, like, there's that kind of, like, a dark side is he wants to see the world under his boot. He's an evil person.
Norman Osborn.
Yes.
Crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. Not Joker. Crazy, not evil.
Evil.
He's evil incarnate in the form of crazy, I think. Yeah.
It's very complicated.
It is. That's what makes it interesting.
Yeah.
Scott Summers.
Good.
Ooh.
You go fuck yourself.
So who's evil? Let's try to remember some of these. Let's see if there's somebody who's evil. Thanos?
Evil.
Or is he just so big that, like, we don't matter to him, so it doesn't count?
No, he's evil. He wants to kill everyone to please death.
Right.
He is evil. Here's a question for you. What about Christopher Lee?
The actor?
Yes.
As himself or Saruman or perhaps Dooku?
Pretty sure
he's evil.
What about Sinestro?
Yeah, evil.
Evil?
Yeah.
What about Electro? On a scale of one of Electro to Magneto, where does Sinestro, this scale only has characters that end in O, go?
There's definitely a working class, low-grade criminal supervillain.
Yeah, they're just trying to get by.
Yeah, your Electros, your Captain, your Snarts, your, you know, a lot of Spider-Man villains fall
in. Rhino.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wrecking Crew.
Crusher Creel.
Yeah, those guys. They're just trying to pay the bill. Sandman.
But they're also like tough guys, and they don't want to, like, you know, they're not too smart, so they beat up things that are in their way.
Yep.
All right, this has been an interesting diversion.
It's an interesting diversion. Well, anyway, go read Avengers number 7. It's got some great Phil Noto art. So there you go.
Green Valley number 8. We're closing in on the finale. Green Valley number 9 is the finale, and I really liked this issue because the guy who is a coward. I had been lying the whole time, got to actually be the hero.
That was nice.
Kill his dragons and actually become the Dragon Slayer. What is his name?
Dragon Slayer.
Bertwald is
the main guy.
Yeah.
Ernie?
Oscar?
It's Ernie Oscar.
You have to kind of put aside the idea that these, you know, old-timey knights understand the concept of time travel. But putting that aside, I like the... So now we've got a conflict between them at the end. You know, one of them sees the value of using the time travel to make his life better, and the other ones see that as a problem. I like that. You know, as we get to the end, it's fracturing the group, not just fighting the villain, but also the idea of, do we use this technology to make our lives better or not? This book has gone very interesting directions, which I did not foresee after reading the first issue, and I really am enjoying it. I like the characters a lot.
Yeah, I do too. I think in a lot, you know, it's one of those things like when they introduced magic, I was like, oh, I don't want that. But then it turned out to be science, and then it was like a time travel story, and I was like, all right. And it's all set up, like all the pieces before it worked in that sense. So I thought that was, it's been
Gulliver.
Huh?
His name is Gulliver.
Gulliver.
Okay.
Gulliver the Dragon Slayer.
Again, Giuseppe Camuncoli is wonderful at a lot of things. Not a great dinosaur artist.
It's true.
Sad.
It's not. Not bad, but yeah. I did like the idea of dinosaurs being interpreted as dragons, though. I thought that was fun.
Well, it's,
makes you think, Ron. Makes you think.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
It's a thinker. But this is fun. I mean, it's action-packed. It's funny. Characters are interesting. It's gone in interesting directions. Everybody's got fantastic beards. What more do you want?
Sounds good. I'm enjoying this immensely, and I was sad to see that the next issue, which is going to be 40 pages, is going to be the last one, because I could see this going on, you know?
You know what this is? This would have been a bog-standard Vertigo book 10, 15 years ago.
Yep.
Agreed. It's very much, I was like, oh, this is totally a Vertigo miniseries. This is, there is none of that anymore.
So, All-Star Batman number 10, Scott Snyder, Raphael Albuquerque is drawing this arc, and, I continue to enjoy this sort of gonzo Batman, although this one he is much closer to, you know, your sort of traditional Batman. Although it's taking place in Miami, and I'm enjoying Miami casual Alfred. Yeah. There's a scene where he's like standing on the, like a balcony, and he's got like a, you know, he's got no tie on, he's got a pocket square, his hair's a little bit longer. He looks like a drug lord.
I did notice that as well too. Raphael Albuquerque, I like his Batman, I think is great. It looks unlike anybody else's Batman, and it's funny because like he's somebody who in my head I have, you know, like his American Vampire work, some of his indie work, stuff like that, but to see him drawing Batman, even for me as a non-Batman fan, is enjoyable.
There's that one shot where he gets catapulted out of the Batmobile and it's from above. I would have put that as a panel of the week had we still been doing that, that feature. It's a great looking book. And it's a weird, you know, the whole sequence in the middle where they crash the baseball game, and it's just all weird, but it's fun.
It was really weird. I can't get my finger on this series. Like I kind of always feel a little like I'm missing something, which at first I was kind of like cool with, but then as it's kept going on, I'm starting to feel like I really feel like I'm missing something, and I don't know if it's me.
I don't know that it is you. I don't know. It's weird. It's like Scott Snyder's Batman id run free. He's not constrained by, even though this is nominally in continuity, because if they say it's not, people won't buy it. He's not constrained by that. It's Batman who curses and Alfred gives people the finger, and people may say that's just gimmicky, but it's sort of the whole tone is like that, and it's been up and down.
Basically, his All-Star. I mean, it is All-Star Batman. I guess it's just the same thing as when Frank Miller did. It just has a different flavor.
Right.
Huh.
It's interesting. I haven't liked every arc. I love the first arc, but this one, I actually really enjoyed this issue quite a bit.
I'll tell you what I'd like to see. And I've been noticing, we were talking about this with Bendis before, and Bendis has sort of like artists that he does stuff with. And I'm starting to I think it would be cool to start to see some sort of other people start to illustrate this stuff with Snyder. It's like really go out and get some sort of interesting new people.
You know what's funny? I agree with that, and I almost feel like Snyder's stories get in the way of that.
Maybe.
You know, like the idea of doing these, you know, like I would much rather see 1, 2, maybe 3 issue arcs at most.
Yeah. Right?
And he's done that a little. I mean, it started off with Romita. That felt like very, very long. But then we got that 1 or 2 jock, and that maybe they are doing that. But like, I'd rather tell more condensed, less mysterious, more actiony kind of stories, you know.
Tell you something, though. The art on the backup, Sebastian Fiumara, that's great.
Yeah,
it was really good.
Well, I was like, who is this?
Well, interesting, because the backup was written by Raphael Albuquerque and Raphael Scavone, which I feel, you know, he's a real Scavone. But interesting that, is this the first backup not written by Snyder in this book?
I think so, because before it was the Snyder and Frank Villa one. Yeah,
the never-ending boring one with the kid with the helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I like the backup too. I mean, the first story is about he's there in Miami. They're fighting the descendants of pirates. That's cool. No one can think that's. And then there's like the Russian Fight Club backup story, and that's also cool. So I thought this was a fun issue.
It's like, is Sebastian Fiamora somehow connected to Max Fiamora, who did the Four Eyes Dragons story?
No idea.
It looks great. It's like Richard Corbin a little bit, and again, like a sort of Vertigo feel. It's great looking. I keep flipping through it. That guy needs to be on more books.
If nothing else, this series has had good artists. I mean, even if it's from his roster, his roster is deep. So, and I think he announced this week that he's quote unquote officially done with regular Batman stories after this.
Snyder. Who is
Snyder?
What's Snyder? What accounts as a regular?
Well, he's doing that metal book. That thing.
Look at this. Confirmed that Max Fiamora is indeed brothers with Sebastian Fiamora.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talent in that family.
Did you call their mom?
I found Max Fiamora's website, and he said that back in 2015, he said it'll be at New York Comic Con with my brother Sebastian.
Huh.
So.
If there was no Sebastian, just he put on a mustache and then just turned around? And.
So is this the last All-Star Batman then?
This issue, no.
Okay.
No.
No, because it ends on a cliffhanger. It's part two.
Right. No. I know. But are they ending All Star Batman so he can work on Metal or what? Well,
this was always going to end. This was always going to be a. I think this was always a 12 issue thing.
Okay. All right.
Good.
Yeah. Cool.
It's. I think it ends with a. What's his name? From
the Joker.
No. The guy who drew
Deadpool.
Yeah, Deadpool for sure. It ends with Deadpool. It ends with a guy who drew the sci-fi story he did.
Sean Murphy,
yes, right. Okay. Wow, you can literally hear us getting older as you listen to these podcasts.
Well, no, like, you know what? It's a real thing. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with the book. When I say I'm lost, like, I just am like, oh, wait, what happened with this? There's so many books, and they're coming out bi-weekly and do it with, like...
I think it's less oldie.
Okay.
Wow. Maybe it is oldie. I think Josh is right. It's more the fact that these books are coming out twice a week, and there's just so much to keep track of now.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
also, we're a little bit oldie.
A little bit oldie.
A little of that.
Yeah. Also,
I prioritize what I remember.
Yeah.
Well, I got 4 hours.
Speaking of all that, I wasn't going to read Rocket number one from Marvel, right? Because I'm a little Guardiansed out these days. Even though Guardians of the Galaxy was good, I just think the individual series are a little lacking. You know, I kind of enjoyed Matt Rosenberg's Rocket Raccoon, the group, you know, like it's whatever.
Yeah.
And then I saw it. It's like, oh, writer Al Ewing, who I'm hit or miss on. And then it's Rocket on a wacky caper, you know, kind of, you know, like, you know, and I was like, oh, I don't need to see another thing. And then I looked at it and I looked at the cover and I went, is that TechNet? And then I read the book, and then as I'm reading the book, it does, for about half the book, it's the, say whether you like it or not, prose accompanied by one image on a page, or two images with a lot of prose on the left, like telling kind of like a noirish kind of crime story. And I was like, oh, whatever. But then I got to the middle of the book, and sure enough, Rocket enlists TechNet, which, leave it to Al Ewing, one of the Brits who, you know, British writers... TechNet was a group of mercenaries that were first introduced in the pages of Excalibur, in the first 10 issues of Excalibur. It's an old Chris Claremont, Alan Davis creation. And I was just like, oh, wow. What world do they roll out these characters for?
Okay, so this makes a lot more sense because you kept saying the word TechNet over and over again, and I was like, I don't know what that word means, and
exactly.
You kept saying like we should know what it means, but I had no idea what TechNet means, and I just was letting you go with it.
Well, listen, for the listeners who are Alan or Chris Claremont, Alan Davis, maybe Alan Moore, Excalibur fans, TechNet means a lot to us. Right?
All six
and,
of you.
Yeah, and it's so I've got to applaud Al Ewing for bringing TechNet back to the fore, because they were one of those wacky British Marvel creations that I don't feel as if gets enough love. And whether or not I want to see them all in black suits with red shirts matching Rocket as they go on a color coordinated caper, it was cool to see these characters again. So it was a very weird emotional roller coaster with reading this book, but
so is listening to you talk about it.
I'm sure it was. Listen, TechNut's important, that's all I'm saying.
I think the fact that he's in there in fact indicates the opposite. Yeah. Like, you're like, why are they bringing these people up? And I was like, because nobody cares.
Nobody cares. So that's
people who are buying this book either care, and there's 45 of you, or they go, Rocket's on the cover, and they buy it, and they don't care what's in it.
Well, I was going to say, the thousands of people who are going to buy this book are buying it for Rocket Raccoon, and I find it very funny that Al Ewing then chose to expose them to TechNet, which is just like... So say what you will, but I ended up enjoying it after a while. And Adam Gorham's art I did enjoy, but I could have done less with a little of the noir prose approach and more sequentials. But that's just me.
Are you sticking with it?
I will stick with it. It looks like it's a mini. So
okay. Yeah. Hey, if you're out there and you want to help iFanboy, you want to keep the show going, you want to support the show, you can go to ifanboy.com/support. You can use our Amazon link there. That means anything you buy on Amazon and any of your regular shopping, we get a piece of that. Doesn't come out of your pocket. Comes out of Jeff Bezos's giant pockets, which are all over his pants. He's got those pants that have lots of pockets in them.
That's what people don't realize. You usually only see Jeff Bezos from the waist up, but from the waist down, he's wearing complete cargo pants.
Just pockets.
Yep. It's all pockets.
They call them Pockets Bezos.
Super, super efficient.
You can also, on that page, directly donate via PayPal button. So if you're an eccentric billionaire and you want to do something nuts, you want to one-up your other eccentric billionaire buddies, go get this.
Oh, yeah? Look at this stupid thing I did with my money.
Yeah. Feel free. PayPal button over at ifanboy.com/support. Also, if you want to become one of our patrons at patreon.com/ifanboy, first, you get all that cool stuff like getting your own damn stupid superpower, which will give you the end of the show. But also, you get to hang out on our Hangouts. Our next patron Hangout is happening Monday, May 22nd at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you want to do it, last time we did a Hangout, we had a really interesting discussion about we want to deep dive in on the state of talent in the industry. We took a lead from that discussion that Josh and Ron had on one of the shows, and we went deep on it for almost an hour. Yep. It was very interesting. So that kind of thing happens at patreon.com/ifanboy. Also, if you join up, you can watch all those old Hangouts. They're all archived there. T-shirts are launching this week, so we've been talking for a while. Our last patron goal we hit, the T-shirt store is launching this very week. We were tweaking one of the colors and the designs, but we have it where we want it to be, and now we're launching the store. So you can look forward to that. And again, patrons got an early look at those new T-shirts at the last Hangout. And finally, we're changing our patron goal. We are less than $600 away from our next goal, which is to do a monthly non-comics media podcast, because the last goal of live streaming this show every week would have destroyed us. So if you want to listen to a non-comics podcast, like when these two jerks did the T2 Trainspotting show without me, you can become a patron guest to the next goal. So patreon.com/ifanboy, ifanboy.com/support. And thank you for everybody who goes there.
All right. So moving on, Deadpool number 30 completely cracked me up with this issue. I kind of go in and out of Deadpool, and I started reading this before I realized it was an 80-page giant. So it's an 80-page 30th issue anniversary issue. But I'll give Jerry Duggan credit. He's fucking hysterical.
He's very funny.
He's very, very. There were numerous points in this book where I laughed out loud, but probably the one that made me laugh out loud the most was basically, so Deadpool goes into space, and first he lands on the moon and he finds the Watcher's grave, and he cuts his way into the Watcher's, you know, kind of old former, you know, house. And he's narrating, and he says how the Watcher, you know, watched and saw everything. And there's a bunch of paintings of like Nixon meeting Elvis with the Watcher in the window. And Michael Jackson holding the baby outside the balcony, right? And the watch is just there on the edge of the balcony like that. It was just very funny. Like I literally, like, maybe every five or so pages made me laugh out loud. But the high point was when he ends up on another planet and he's asking somebody where he can find work, and alien says you should go to nowhere, and we proceed to get a 4-page Abbott and Costello routine about nowhere. Oh, I see.
4 pages.
So where do I go? I go nowhere. And it's a real place, nowhere? Certainly. The place I got to go. That's right. Tell him nowhere. All I'm trying to do is find out where to go. Nowhere. So tell me where to go. Nowhere. Like, it just. And then he goes, say nowhere again. Say it one more time. So good job, Jerry Duggan. Applause. And there's a nice little note, another mention of the Nova Corps. Here as Scott Adsit joins the Nova Corps. Yeah.
Lovely. So similarly to why you decided to read Rocket, I was looking through the comics this week and I saw Uncanny Avengers number 23. And I was like, hey, look, that's Wonder Man.
Yeah.
Shooting out of the body of Rogue. And I was like, I want to know why that's happening. So I picked it up and I read it, and I was like, oh, this is like the last issue of this. It's completely over. But I was like, maybe I'll be interested in Wonder Man. And they, you know, it was like a resetting, like sort of the, I guess it's over. But it was kind of fun to read. And I was like, I bet this was pretty good. There's a lot of Cable stuff I didn't quite understand. And it took place inside his head. But in the end, Wonder Man's out there and Deadpool spent all his money.
Yeah, in Deadpool 30, Scott Adsit is selling off his stuff, like from the former headquarters. I like the idea of picking up the 23rd issue in a comic that you've never read before. So I applaud you for that. Yeah.
You know, the thing that bugged me, though, is at the end of it, like, they're basically leading into what is Secret Empire.
Yeah.
You know, because every time they show Captain America in that suit, it makes me think about it. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
That's what I decided this week. Like, as a miniseries, as a other thing that's happening, fine, it's kind of interesting. But if that's, like, everything is tied into, I could take a flyer on that.
Welcome to 2009.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah.
Yep.
I don't think I realized it, but as it sort of intruded on this, because I was like, all right, Wonder Man, I'm going to read some Marvel, you know?
Yeah.
And then at the end, I was like, no, it's going to be that, too. Because I read The Secret, whatever the one with the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents was.
Secret Warriors?
Yeah, that one, which I'd never read, but I was like, I'll try it. And I was like, I don't know. It's not doing anything for me.
Yeah.
Even more so than other things that didn't do anything for me.
Action Comics 979, I only wanted to mention because... In this issue, Lois and Clark decide to move back to the city from wherever in the sticks they've been living this whole time.
I know where you're going with this.
And they're buying a giant duplex with a giant balcony.
I guess her book sales are pretty good.
On two reporter salaries.
I honestly tried not to have that thought because I was like, wait a minute. Then they kept going through with it and I was like, you know what? That's the most unbelievable thing in the book, actually.
Right. Not the fact that there's a Kryptonian who can fly. It's this apartment that they spend 1, 2, 3 pages walking through. That's how big it is. And they go up and downstairs. And there's a giant balcony.
Well, good for them. Life is good for them. All right.
Yeah.
How? Superman skimming?
Something's going on. Like, somebody, like, he's coming up with, like, he's patenting Kryptonian shit.
Maybe.
Making money.
I like the idea
of
skimming. Like he's selling papers and he's charging 35 cents, but they only cost 25.
Is that a built-in piano?
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about?
A built-in piano.
It's this thing that sticks out of the wall that kind of looks like a piano, but it's like a foot off the floor.
It's like a piano Murphy bed.
Weird. There's no need for a Murphy bed in this place. You can play basketball in there. You can play basketball on the balcony.
Yeah, and no one would be disturbed in the other room. Yeah, what is that? No, that's a fireplace.
Ain't no fireplace I ever heard of.
That looks like a gas fireplace.
Who gets gas fireplace? Oh, jeez. Anyway.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like
it. Some nice built-in, though.
That's a weird drawing. And then it also looked like a high-rise, and they get outside, and it's just a brownstone.
Yeah.
Did you notice that?
I didn't even catch that part.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, you're right.
They walk outside. I mean, it's more like a Dakota type of building, I guess.
Yeah, it looks like
Dakota,
but they walk. Yeah,
but the ground floor looks like a brownstone, and then as you look up, it's like a big, you know, Central Park West building.
There's also a weird part where when he runs off to save the day, and he makes a point of saying the world doesn't need to know I'm married.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Also, his cape is tucked in. Anyway,
tucked into his.
Can I just point out one thing? And I know they didn't put it on the list or anything. And this is this short. The new Superman issue this week, the Chinese Superman, was great.
It was great. It was really good.
Really great.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about it in any other way.
I forgot to mention that. But I did enjoy it. Yeah,
I
agree. Yeah,
I just like noticed it. I was like, all right, that was awesome. Like, that would have maybe been a pick of the week. It was really fun.
Yeah. So it's been a while, Josh. But why don't you come here? Let's go to the other side of the room and let's sit down in Star Wars Corner.
Well, if we're in Superman's house, I won't even hear you talking.
Yeah, exactly.
Because just get that weird ass... and whatever that is.
So, it's like a grill. So Star Wars, The Screaming Citadel, #1 came out this week. Josh, what did you think of it?
I looked at it. I thought, I don't know about that. I thought, oh, it's more Kieran Gillen. We get to spend time with Dr. Aphra. And look, it's Luke Skywalker.
Yes.
And this is in his yellow adventuring jacket. Or metal jacket, however you want to go. This is one of those ones that you have to say, all right, I'm going to just ignore the fact that none of this should have happened. and take these interesting characters that Kieran Gillen has and match them up with Luke Skywalker at this phase.
Yeah.
And let's see what happens. And under those circumstances, it was fun. I mean,
what happens in it that should not have happened?
So basically, Luke. This is where I want to know. Okay, this is where I become the continuity wonk. But where we left off, Luke, he's in his spaceship flying to go rescue C-3PO and R2. And the last story arc in Star Wars was all the stupid Yoda climbed up a mountain story, and Luke actually never found C-3PO and R2. And now this picks up with Luke landing in the Outer Rim at a bar and running into Dr. Aphra and then going off on an adventure with her. And
I'm having a fight in the bar.
And having a fight in the bar and then going to a weird auction to this weird woman who wants to feed on Jedis or whatever, where we may have seen Watto, or if not Watto, at least another Troidarian.
Yep.
Republic credits. But
Numium. It was not like this should have, I should have flung this across the room.
You should have.
But I was like, he just doesn't care, and yes. I kind of like that. And I like Aphra and BT and whoever and Black
the murder droids.
Yeah, the murder droids and the Wookiee who's only there because he owes her money, but he does everything she wants.
Well, here's my only complaint about this is that the villain, this queen woman who wants to feed on the Jedi, it starts to maneuver a little into Red Lantern imagery.
It's more like, it feels like it was a vampire story, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Yeah,
Dracula in space.
Yeah, yeah. But whatever. It's got and Luke and Leia and Sana are in it, and so you know. I think this could be fun, but I think you're right. It's got to be this doesn't matter, and just have fun with it.
Which yeah, is, and that's
what you should do anyway. So yeah.
Yeah, if he was a less interesting writer,
yeah,
then it would fall apart very quickly.
Okay, and then you, the patrons, the supporters of iFanboy, as Connor mentioned earlier, you can support us at patreon.com/iFanboy. Every week, patrons can vote on a book, and this week, a huge response for the latest young animal title, Bug, The Adventures of Forager, #1, story and art by Lee Allred and Mike Allred, colored by Laura Allred. What did you guys think of Bug, The Adventure of the Forager?
It was funny because I opened it up and on the first page I said, oh, I haven't thought about Foragers since Cosmic Odyssey.
Yeah.
And then
you love you love Cosmic Odyssey.
And I love it. And then we immediately go into a flashback to Cosmic Odyssey on the first page.
Yep.
And then we have a very bizarre story that seems to be taking place firmly in the old DCU.
Yes. And here's the thing. If you like Mike Allred and Madman, and you've never read DC Comics, this is the book for you. Because this is a very Mike Allred book. And I'm a Mike Allred fan, so I'm totally okay with that. But this, as much as this was steeped in DC lore, I think this is just as steeped in Allred-ness. You know?
It's definitely very punny, like those Allred books are.
Yep.
Lots of jokey references to movies. I'm very curious what Josh thought of this.
I read it twice. Well, not quite twice, but I fell asleep the one time.
Well, that's your own fault.
And then I came back to read it later, and I was like, I don't remember any of this. And I was like, oh, it's because it was all a dream sequence, and I have no idea what any of this is about. Please, please make it stop. When is this thing over? Oh, God, thank God it's over. That's the review you can put on the front. Oh, thank God it's over, Josh Planning at iFanboy.com.
That's what I expected.
It's not bad.
I think it's a double whammy. I think it's a double whammy of characters or world. I mean, I'm sure you've read Cosmic Odyssey, and meanwhile, like you do like the New Gods because of the Kirby connection, but I feel like this is deep New Gods, right?
I don't have enough of it to appreciate what was happening, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
There was one little bit in the middle, actually, where they were talking about Kemu and what a rebel is and what that means. And I thought it was like, and that little bit was like two pages. I was like, that was really smart and interesting.
Yep.
But it was surrounded in all that other dreamscape stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. I fall in the middle. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was. At times, a tough read.
I loved it because I love Allred.
That's my thing. Like, I'm not a big Allred fan, but I want to understand it. I want to appreciate it and like it. Like, enough people that I respect, like, think it's really good, and so I'm trying.
Are you talking about the writing or the art or both?
The art more than anything. Like,
that's so fascinating.
Oh, the art.
I know.
You think that he'll be right up your alley.
Yeah.
I know. That's why I had to try, but like there's something about it.
Well, here's my one thing about it is that there's a lot packed into a lot of these pages.
Sure.
And comparing this to his work on Silver Surfer, which also an issue came out this week, I feel like Silver Surfer is got more room to breathe.
Yeah, this was dense.
Like, I feel like this was a little overwritten. And I don't know if that's by nature of him working with his brother Lee or not working with a writer in quotes like Dan Slott. But I'm just saying, like, and that was one of my complaints with Mad Men is that sometimes it, like, Mad Men was at its best when he had room to breathe and showed more than telling, and this was doing a lot of telling.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was intentional. Like,
he had very little communicating.
Yeah.
Like a throwback thing or not, but.
Who knows? All right. Well,
I think there was something of that, like, sort of wacky old fourth world, you know, that isn't entirely clear, which I guess is an aesthetic choice, but not necessarily.
And I feel like we should clarify that it was Madman.
Madman.
Yeah.
Not Madman.
I always do that. I'm sorry. Asgard.
Because if he did a Mad Men book,
that would be amazing.
5 stars.
If you don't like the title, change the conversation.
What would you a Mad Men comic book drawn by Phil Noto with covers by Phil Noto drawn by Mike Allred?
5 stars. Would bang again.
5 stars. Absolutely. Would bang. All right. Ratings. 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 Connor.
I'm going to give it a 4. Story's 3. The art's a 5. So it averages to 4.
Okay. Josh.
3.
All right.
And not for me. 3.
I'm going to give it.
Well, who are you waiting for, Ron?
I just like it. I'm not. I want to. I don't think it's bad. I just.
Right.
Like,
it's not
give
for you.
What is it for you? What is your rating?
I'm looking at it.
Give it a 2. It's okay.
I don't want. It's not bad. It's not like objectively like, oh, these people had no skill. It was, you know, these people were like, you could make a beautiful cheese dish. I'm not going to like it.
Right. The page of him with all the dominoes, with all the characters on the dominoes. Come on.
There were really impressive things in it, but cohesively. But some people like that more than you know.
The OMAC domino, come on. I give it a solid 4.
I mean, I'm left with the question, though. Again, I'm asking this all the time. Like, you've got a publishing industry that's struggling to sell books. Who the fuck is this for?
Yeah.
How many people are going to buy this?
I think we should give you a weekly segment in which you ask that question.
Who the basically fuck is this are. Well, no, like, how attractive is it to bring in My Chemical Romance guy and be like, just do whatever you want. Spend as much money as you can. Like, I don't know how this business decision makes sense.
Yeah.
When there's nothing going on at Vertigo, that thing's been gutted. And then there's this. I don't understand.
Neither do I.
It seems like an odd use of resources. And, like, it's the same thing that keeps happening. You've got all these people right here. Do something with them.
Yeah. Oh, well. All right. Sticking with it.
You get the master of horror right next to you.
Sticking with it, Connor.
Yes, I'm going to stick with it.
Josh.
No.
Yes, I am. All right, so thank you, patrons. Go to patreon.com/ifanboy. You can sign up. Anybody who becomes a patron can vote every week. All patrons can vote. So please go to patreon.com/ifanboy, get involved. And if you sign up at a patron level of $5 or higher, you get your own special superpower, which is the real, what keeps the people coming back. And so, Josh, lead us off.
Alan David Muir. His head is 2 times the size of a normal head. It's twice as dense.
Twice as dense.
Twice as dense and twice as large.
Is he twice as smart?
The brain is in there, and it is also larger. So there, if nothing else, there are more synaptic connections. So theoretically, I think he would have to be smarter.
Is he like Hector Hammond?
I suppose. Is that exactly 2 times as large?
I don't know. I don't know the exact proportion.
Well,
of his head.
That's what's happening here.
His head is pretty big, though. Yeah.
How does he get in shirts?
It's not always a cakewalk for this kind of thing.
I'm not trying to poke a hole in your theory. I'm just feeling bad for the guy. He can't wear a t-shirt ever.
A lot of tank tops and button downs.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Because you do what you got to do.
Don't even ask about hats.
his head is two times as large. There's no hats he can get. He'd have to have custom hats.
Yeah, he'd have the custom hats. Yeah, yeah.
Well, a regular size custom hat. Haderdashery.
A haderdashery.
I guess.
Oh. All right. Cool.
Hoods. You know, there's drawbacks, but at the same time, you know, he could smash something with it if he wanted to.
He's got to live in a warm climate.
I would just like to get some clarification. This is the one that you had prepared before the show.
Yeah, I wrote two times large head.
Excellent. Okay.
And then when I said it, I extrapolated.
All right, fair enough. All right, next up, we want to thank James Burton, who can level things perfectly. He's got an amazing sense of balance, and he can hang a shelf, and he can level it. He can hang a painting, make sure it's level. He's the leveler.
He's the leveler.
Yeah, there you go. Level.
Level. All right.
Luke. According to the ground or the, because sometimes you'll get like a crooked angle in the house.
The horizon. No, the appropriate leveling that needs to occur for the placement in attuned with the horizon.
Wow.
So.
Luke Batt, were he an X-Men, and maybe he is, I don't know, he would hang out with Storm a lot because he can create weather, but only directly over his head and very small.
Okay, just really localized weather patterns.
Right, so he could make a thunderstorm, but it's a very small cartoonish thunderstorm above his head.
Like he's having a bad day in a comic strip?
Yes. Can he make it rain? Yes, but only on him.
All right.
David Crone has calming pheromones.
Ooh.
If you're near him,
good. Well done. So he's like Gambit was originally, but instead of attraction, he calms. That's I like
that. Yeah, he's like the Purple Man, but he reduces anxiety.
That's great.
That's a good one. That's actually a good one.
And that's just to clarify, that's the one you did not have prepared.
Yeah, I wrote that in the last minute.
Well done, Josh. Inspired.
Thank you.
All right. So go to patreon.com/myfanboy. You can get your own powers. Everybody wants one. Make sure you get one. Let's move on to
Alan, but you're welcome, David.
Let's move on to the email. Josh, why don't you take it away with the first email?
Kevin of Fairfax, Virginia said, I just watched Batman and Bill and cried a lot. And I was thinking about if they ever make a movie about any of many comic book creators who didn't get the credit they deserve, or just a true story of any creator, what writer or director would you want on it and what story? Maybe David Fincher and Aaron Sorkin do a movie about Jack Kirby and Stan Lee's relationship from the 40s to the 60s in the vein of Marvel Comics' The Untold Story. Maybe a casting if you're feeling inspired. Also, how do you think this would affect the mass audience and how they view these characters?
It's almost impossible to answer the second question.
There's a lot there.
I don't know how it would affect. I mean, I think that there's definitely a historical, you know, similar to like The Aviator or like these real people that, you know, the Howard Hughes story or whatever, these really, you know, fantastic tales of what really existed. I think that the allure of the 40s and 60s comic scene or, you know, would be interesting. I'm more interested, if you want to go for the Marvel, The Untold Story, talk about the late 70s, 80s.
I was going to say the early 70s.
Well, yeah, like I was going to say 70s. The 70s, and you've got Stanley out in Hollywood hawking this stuff. And keep in mind, that's the time period when Stan took the naked centerfold picture with the issue of the Hulk in front of his stuff. But then you've also got Crazy Jim Shooter. Right, there's a lot to mine from those 70s, 80s. I also think there's a lot to mine from the 50s, which I'm surprised that the whole Seduction of the Innocent stuff hasn't been made into a historical movie.
So my question, real quick, Batman and Bill. I saw that was the thing that came out. I thought that was a documentary. Is that not a documentary?
It is. Yes.
Oh, okay. So that the premise of this question was somewhat flawed to me then.
Well, he just moved on from a fictional story.
Yeah.
I want to veto the part when we ask about the filmmaker.
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard. It's because that's so pigeonholing, and like he already went to Sorkin, which is like imagine Stan walking around the office and doing walk and talks with Jack.
I mean, yes, that would be great.
Yeah. I mean, he would do a great job.
Yeah. Yes, but he would. I mean, the Stan and Jack story would be sort of the most interesting one to do, but I think the problem with any of these, the challenge, I guess, is that it's not like closure on most of these stories. You know, they die and then no one got what they want until their relatives sue the company however many dozens of years later.
Well, that's kind of closure then.
Yeah. I mean, in a sense, but
I think that's the. I mean, it is cliche, but it is the most interesting story you could tell. I think is the rise of Marvel and the relationship between the two of them, because you have all these characters people love now.
Yeah, and that's why it's important.
By these two middle-aged guys. And their relationship and how it faltered. But I also think you can just do Kirby's life because he fought in the war and he grew up in the upper on the Lower East Side, and it was interesting, and he had a really interesting life, and he didn't become a big deal until he was middle aged. And then it all fell apart for him. I think that's a very interesting story arc.
And also, I mean, the thing is, I'm seeing that it's not a big movie that everyone would see. It's more like the American Splendor kind of thing. That's what it would end up as. I mean, but the thing was, like, Kirby's super interesting because he wasn't like, he's not without fault in any of this. Like, he made decisions.
I think that you could actually go bigger than American Splendor if you paint it as the guy who made Captain America.
Well, in that sense, you know, somewhere between Jack Kirby and Stan Lee is, you know, an Elvis Presley level for pop culture.
Yeah.
I mean, in sort of like the creation point of where pop culture is right now.
Yeah.
What if Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum played them?
It's directed by Lord and Miller.
Yeah. What if we did that?
No, not silly.
By Brett Ratner. All right.
I think that's like the only one you could do that might be interesting to the mass audience.
I still think the Seduction of the Innocent one is interesting. I think that's like a quiz show level interesting. You know, like that kind of time period. Yeah,
what is the story in there other than that happened? And then
it destroyed people's careers. You've got Bill Gaines in there. You've got, you know, all the artists in the 50s who had to, you know, do something else or do porno comics on the side because that's how they could survive. If you look at what happened to, you know, Schuster's career after that, you know, let me tell you,
it's a hell of text at the end of the movie.
Yeah, it's a long scrolling text.
It's a long, like, yeah, you know, like, yeah. Marie Severin went on to, you know.
I think there's absolutely a story there, and I'm sure, like, however you know, the characters of, you know, William Gaines, the character of Dr., what's his name? I can't
Shivago.
Think of it. No, the
Frederick
guy.
Dr. No,
Frederick
Dr. No.
Frederick Wortham.
Yes, Wortham. Yeah. You know, like all that stuff and why they would do it, you know, and you take the idea of how big comic books were.
Yep.
Is part of culture. I mean, and then what happened afterwards.
You got a little bit of Mad Magazine in there. There's a lot to do. I think that's a good subject. So.
It is. I agree with you.
Great question, Kevin. Thank you. And we got a voicemail. Rashad's got a question that's mainly for me.
Oh, imagine that.
Hey, how's it going? This is Rashad down in Florida. I've been thinking about this since Rogue went through the Siege Perilous and was banging Magneto down in the Savage Land. Back in the day, the X-Men could not be seen by electronic devices, so they couldn't show up on camcorders or your security video or anything like that. I can't remember if it was a spell or something. It's probably some crazy shit. But do they still have that? Was it just written out? Or is it just a dropped plot line like Luke Cage's scroll, baby? Anyway, thanks a lot. Peace.
I think this guy's great. Is that what happens when you live in Florida? You just chill?
I was delighted to find out that people still think like this.
If I ever have to say Siege Perilous again.
Siege Perilous.
It's fantastic.
Siege Perilous. I know the answer to this, but it's less about more like this going back to, this is a nice little bookend of the pick of the week about what makes the X-Men comics work. It's shit like this. Right? I mean, it's just like, wait a minute, what was that really wacky thing that just they never went back to, right? And you don't get that anymore in comics these days.
I don't remember them being impervious to electronic surveillance.
So basically what happened was that after the fall of the mutants and when the X-Men supposedly quote-unquote died in front of everybody in Dallas, Roma cast a spell on all the X-Men to make them undetectable to cameras or electronic devices. And basically it was this whole ruse that the X-Men were dead. And that's why, and that's when they went down to Australia. They were hiding out in Australia, and it was, you know, actually a really clever idea. And then how it was handled in the comics was that once their time in Australia ended and they went through the Siege Perilous, then the effects of the spell wore off. Now, that said, Dazzler and somebody else too, Wolverine and Storm never went through the Siege Perilous. And so then all of a sudden they appear on screens and it stops working. And the explanation for that is because the spell wore off once everyone found out that they were still alive, which everyone found out during the Extinction Agenda because they were on TV and this whole it was a big thing. It was a very public thing. Regardless, it's one of those in-between the panels things that just never got addressed in the comics. And I just love it. I love it.
You know what I just realized my secret power is?
What?
I completely fade out when people start talking about it. I just realized, like, when I listened to the voicemail, I was listening to his voice because I was like, your voice and accent are really interesting. Yeah. And then I was like, I have no idea what he said. Yep. And then I was thinking about that when you started talking, and I realized I didn't listen to a thing that you just said either. And it's not voluntary. Yep. It totally, I was like, I whatever.
This is that time period of the X-Men, like X-Men 2, like 200 to like 270, that is just a golden age of just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, right?
You know what's funny is that that's when I tried to start reading X-Men, 240-ish, I
think.
That's
what I loved, so.
And I was like, what the hell is any of this?
Anyway. Thank you, Rashad, for that voicemail. You can get on the show by emailing us at contact@ifanboy.com. Either email us your text or send in a voicemail like Rashad did. Be sure to include your name, where you're from, and how long you've been thinking about the question. And thanks for checking in with us. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. A couple of things to make sure you don't want to miss out on. If you go back in the iFanboy feed, you can see last week we released our Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 podcast, where Connor and I talked about how we didn't like it. and it's not that I didn't dislike it. It's just that I was unsatisfied by it.
You were positive on it.
I was positive. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. Let's just say that. So,
all right.
It's funny because I watched the first one with my kids that day that you guys went to do that, and I was like, that was really good, and I was kind of looking forward to it. But now.
Well, if you like the first one, you'll like the second one.
Yeah, I want you, Josh, I want you to go see it.
I'm going to see it.
Yeah, because I would really like to talk to you about it, because my issues with it are, like, deep in story, and I think that's where you do well, so, yeah.
Okay.
So.
Well, your issues are correct, Ron. There is no story. Anyway,
exactly.
I know we don't have it on here, but people keep asking, Ron, how are you doing with Iron Fist?
I put a big dent in it and then I hit a wall. So I'm going to be back at it this weekend. So you finished.
The show is basically all wall.
You finished now, right?
I finished it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I should be able to make a big dent in it this weekend. So hopefully soon. So.
All right. So also we got a Booksplode coming. One of the patron goals that got unlocked was our monthly either Booksplode or Talksplode. Our Booksplode is our book review show. We're going to be talking about Roughneck from Jeff Lemire, the new original graphic novel. It's a hefty book. I'm holding it in my hands right now. And that'll be coming to you soon. We're recording it very shortly, and it'll probably be out in a couple of weeks, that show.
And, of course, another part of the whole patron thing is the patron hangout. So if those of you who are contributing like to plan ahead on May 22nd, Monday night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, we'll be doing our next patron hangout, which is conveniently located in the month that is associated with.
Yes. Yeah. And we're giving you lots of time to plan ahead for it this time. So there you go.
Yeah. So write some questions.
Yes.
Or don't, and watch what happens. That could also be interesting.
Head over to ifanboy.com where you can find all our other podcasts. You find the Guardians of the Galaxy podcast and all the other previous episodes. If you want to follow us on social media so you don't miss out on anything, go to facebook.com/ifanboy. Give us a like or follow @ifanboy on Twitter. And that's where you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out if you want to be in on it. And, of course, you can follow us individually for nonsense and food photos and narcissism at J.A. Flanagan, at RonXO, and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Twitter and Instagram.
And if you like the show, please write a review on iTunes or just leave a star rating. Better than that is to tell your friends about it. If you got a friend who reads comics and doesn't listen to iFanboy, tell them to check it out. Why not? It can't hurt them. It's not going to hurt them.
They might not like it.
This is an hour out of their long life. Of many hours. So do that. And last week, Josh told people to say if they were still listening to this part of the show, and only about 4 or 5 did, and makes me concerned. Only 4 people actually listening. So here's what I want to do now.
I had a lot of people actually tell me directly.
Oh, Connor. Right. Well, still, but even then, it like 10.
I want everyone who's still listening to either tweet at us or Instagram, which means you'll have to tag us individually, or on our Facebook page, a picture of Dr. Fraser Crane, and I want you to say, I'm listening.
All right. There's your mission. Okay.
That's, I wonder if you've made the barrier of entry a little too high.
Nope. That's perfect. A GIF, Connor, is a GIF acceptable?
GIF is also acceptable. It has to be Dr. Fraser Crane, though.
Okay.
Any era, though. I like, that's what
say,
I like.
Any era, but it has to say, I'm listening in the
in the post. Okay.
It should frankly be your favorite era of Dr. Fraser Crane. And can we all weigh in right now on your favorite era of Dr. Fraser Crane?
Bearded Cheers.
Agreed. Bearded Cheers.
That late era, like the after Diane left him Cheers.
Yep.
Yes.
Bearded Cheers.
I was going to say the same thing. That's surprising.
And that's why we're together.
Well, it's the best era.
All right. Well, there's your homework. Until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
He had just become another drunk at the bar at that point.
Yep.
He was defeated. That's great.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.